funny how often food and politics get mixed up together. Aaron Bobrow-Strain teaches about food and politics, specifically about the global food system, at Whitman College. When he decided to write a history of white bread, the iconic, puffy, white, store-bought loaf, he knew it might get a little controversial. He tells N. Strainchamps he had no idea just how loaded the subject would get.
I started off, it was just a book about bread. I'm kind of an amateur baking geek, and I really wanted to write a book about bread. You know, I'm one of those stereotypical backyard chicken-raising, cheese-making. You know, I worked on a humane, sustainable cattle ranch that I'm part owner of, and I really like to pickle things. I really do think that, you know, the industrial food system is broken in many ways, and we need to fix it. And I looked around, and there's all these books out there that are telling us in great detail how bad our food is, and then offering some kind of fairly simplistic solutions that are basically, you know, change your diet, change the world. And it felt a little unsatisfying. And what I really thought was, like, how have groups done this in the past, right? How have people tried to change America's food system in the past? What have they succeeded at? What have they failed at? And it turns out that industrial white bread is a fun way to get at that because it's our most fought over food.
It's always been really important to us, but you're suggesting that bread has always been political. So if we look back at the 20s or the 30s, for instance, bread became kind of a metaphor for questions about race, citizenship, immigration, even. Can you describe what happened?
Yeah, we see this, say, from the 1880s into the 1920s, middle-class, native-born Americans go through, you know, what we could maybe call a moral panic about the cleanliness of bread. Newspaper headlines scream out, dangerous bakeries threaten the city, or germs lurk in your bread. And even good old mother's bread gets condemned by many scientific experts as being a potential biohazard. And it's very strange to me because I can't find any evidence that bread was actually making people sick.
So why was everybody so worried about the uncleanliness of bread?
Exactly. So when I start to go through the piles of testimonies and hearing transcripts about the quote-unquote bread problem, what I realize is that food fears about bread, cleanliness, had become inseparable from racial fears about the new, supposedly dirty, scary, threatening immigrants who were sweating away in those small bakeries and touching the bread with their hands. So in this moment where bread from local bakeries is seen as kind of scary and dark and dank and threatening, gleaming white bread coming out of these shining white factories full of stainless steel surfaces provides a kind of reassuring sense of safety for people. And the, you know, this was underlying anxiety. This wasn't necessarily generated by the industrial baking sector, but they certainly benefited from it. And they start to capitalize on it. They advertise the new industrial white bread as untouched by human hands. That's the big slogan. And it was very clear that the human hands they were referring to were these supposedly scary, dirty immigrants.
Was it really clear? I mean, how do you see that connection getting made between immigrants and bread and unsanitary?
There's this great moment in a hearing that takes place in New York in the 19-teens where commissioners are interviewing witness after witness after witness, and all the witnesses are testifying about how horrific the conditions are for immigrant bakers. They were working 18-hour days. They were working in these dark, unventilated, overheated basement bakeries. They had tuberculosis because the air quality was so bad. But the commissioners reframe it as a question of how do we protect the consumer from these bad immigrant bakers. And there's this moment where the one commissioner is asking the guys, you know, well, do you think that these bakers could be taught to have clean habits? The witness says, well, yes, I do think that. And the commissioner says something like, no, not really. These people are inherently unclean. And the other guy says, well, no, I think they could be reformed. And I realized at that moment they were not talking about bread anymore. They were talking about the nature of immigration and the nature of new immigrants.
And citizenship, right?
Right. And I think that gets at a central point of the book is that our fears and our anxieties, even our desires and hopes about food, are often really not about food. They're about much bigger social questions.
How do you see that right now in debates about food and in particular about bread?
I think that we're in an interesting moment right now where a lot of our anxieties and aspirations and desires around food and bread in particular deal with notions of class. Industrial white bread has gone from being an icon of progress and responsible parenting, even national strength and patriotism, to being an emblem of poverty, ill health, and poor choices. And in that shift, what we've seen is a kind of segmentation of the bread market along class lines. Industrial white bread has become synonymous with white trash. Mm-hmm. And I think it is this shift between the counterculture and something that happens in the 70s and 80s, right? In the 60s, the counterculture takes up industrial white bread as everything that's wrong with America, right? It's bland, it's chemical, it's corporate. There's the slogan, don't eat white, eat right, right?
There's this great quotation, Diana Vreeland said, people right. who eat white bread have no dreams.
Right. So it's already a kind of a moralizing force there. But it isn't just about health, right? Beatrice Thrum Hunter, who's an influential Whole Foods advocate at that moment, talks about how baking your own whole wheat bread is an act of revolt against the mechanization of life, an act of social revolt. So to eat non-white bread was to be part of a great collective social change. By the Reagan years, that sense of collective rebellion gets folded into a kind of individualistic, consumer-driven self-actualization movement, right? Where, for better or for worse, the whole wheat bread is really not about creating larger social change. It's about improving oneself, being individually more healthy, better looking, more successful.
Isn't the subtext here that all of these food reform movements, those in the past and then by extension those in the present right now, are all misguided because to a certain extent we're not really talking about food. We're talking about these other underlying social issues.
Exactly. The real lesson here is that food movements have focused too much on trying to change individual food choices. And I know that kind of sounds a little counterintuitive, right? Because shouldn't food movements try to change our food choices?
Mm-hmm.
But what I see is when you look at these battles over bread, two things tend to happen when food movements focus so much on individual food choices. Whether they're focusing on trying to get us to eat more industrial white bread or trying to get us to eat no industrial white bread or trying to get us to eat, you know, local food, whatever, when they focus on trying to change the world through changing individual food choices, even the most well-meaning of us food reformers end up reinforcing social divides between the, you know, the supposedly virtuous us who knows how to make the right choices about food and then the pitiful, in need of help, them who can't seem to make the right choices about food. And there's a lot of people out there talking about that now. Let's go help the poor make better choices. But at root, our food problems are about income. And there's all kinds of studies that show that poor people would eat better food if they had more income. Average wages have been stagnant for most people in the United States since the 1970s. Inequality is growing at phenomenal rates. As a food historian, I think that when we look back at our obesity crisis in 40, 50 years, we'll see that we didn't have a problem with uneducated people making the wrong choices about food and needing to be told otherwise, so much as we had a problem with stagnant wages and a highly concentrated food system where a few companies basically get away with setting the terms for how the country eats.
Aaron Bobrow-Strain is the author of White Bread, A Social History of the Store-Bought Loaf.